We'd like to open God's Word this morning to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3, starting at verse 1, we'll read to verse 8. Proverbs 3. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Lord, we praise you for your word this morning.
In Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 to 19, was the first lecture of the father to the son. As the son is beginning to leave and go out into the world and make his own way, the father is teaching him the ways of wisdom, the ways of God. And in that first part of that lecture, in chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, the father identifies his teaching, the teaching of the wise that is collected in this book called Proverbs. He identifies it as garlands of grace for the son's head. He identifies it as chains or pendants for his neck. That is, if he is going to obey, put into practice this teaching or the teachings of the wise, they will be, the teachings themselves will be like a garland of grace or a pendant or chain for his neck. And when we looked at that passage, we saw that in the ancient culture, chains or pendants, garlands that were put on people's heads, were symbols. Symbols of life. Symbols of victory. Symbols of protection. Symbols of guidance. And so the point the father is making in chapter 1, verses 8 and 9 is, he's saying, if you embrace these teachings, my son, they will be protection for you. They will be guidance for you. They will be an increase of status for you. And now as we jump ahead and we come to chapter 3, the third teaching session or third lecture of the Father, he now begins to elaborate more of the benefits, more of the positive things that are going to come about in the son's life if he holds to the teachings. If he obeys them, the son will begin to experience positively in his life a number of real benefits. And actually the father, he goes on through chapter 3 and chapter 4 to mention a number of these benefits, but we only have time this morning to look at three of them. The first benefit that is going to come to the son if he embraces the teaching of the father is he's going to have a longer, peaceable life. We don't have any ultimate control over the day of our death. We can try to avoid it, we can try to prolong it, but we will all die. And what the book of wisdom or the wisdom teachings are teaching and saying is that we do not have to needlessly advance that day of our death. We don't have to die prematurely because of certain choices or certain actions that we have made. If we follow the teachings of wisdom, if we start with the fear of God and let him direct our lives, the benefit that that is actually going to bring the Son and bring us is we'll add to our lives. It will stop us from prematurely ending our life. So, chapter 3, verse 2, verse 16, chapter 4, verse 10, chapter 10, verse 27, and other verses state that if we meet a particular condition, we will lengthen our life. We'll add years, we'll add days to our life. The condition to be fulfilled to lengthen our days and not prematurely end our life is stated in verse 1 of chapter 3. Do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commands. When you see the word heart, remember, it's not talking about that chunk of muscle that's in your rib, behind your ribs, that pumps your blood. Usually in the Bible, the term or the word heart is not referring to that, but it's referring to your inner self, the true self, where the seat of your real character and decisions and values and real thoughts are. You know, we can clothe, we can mask the outside. So it's saying, in your heart, in the inner personality, in the total personality, the real you, if you keep the commands and the wisdom teaching from there, and then let that teaching, of course, come out into physical, outward manifestation through your whole body, mind, and soul, then you shall lengthen your days. What does that look like? What does this kind of obedience of keeping with our whole heart the commandments and not forgetting the teaching so that it adds years or days to our life? What would that look like? It's actually quite simple. Of the number of fools or types of fools that are identified in the book of Proverbs, one of them is the drunk. God bans drunkenness as sin. He did not create, he did not design our bodies to take excessive amounts of alcohol all at once. To disobey God's prohibition on excessive drinking and getting drunk is to go against what God has designed our bodies for. God has not designed our bodies to fly. You can try to jump off the roof of your barn, but you will not fly. You will hit the ground with a thud. Our bodies are not designed for that. Likewise, God did not design our bodies to consume great amounts of alcohol. So if we want to go against his design, against his prohibition on excessive drinking and getting drunk, then we are going to needlessly risk our life, needlessly harm ourselves, needlessly perhaps shorten the days of our life, just as if you're going to jump off the roof of your barn because you think you can fly. You can do something that you're not designed to do. What are some of those ways that we could advance the day of our death? Liver disease, a drunken fight where we're mortally injured, or swimming and drowning while you're drunk, just like a number of people in my high school when I was in high school. They would go to the gravel pits to swim, and they'd get drinking. And then they would have a competition. Who can swim across and back the gravel pit? These aren't real small ones. These are fairly large. And in their drunken state, they only make it halfway across and drown. You see, in rebelling or living contrary to how God has designed us and how he's designed the life and the universe, if we want to go against that, which is sin, then we're not living according to the manufacturer's instructions, and we bring premature death, premature harm and destruction into our lives. And it ruins and shortens our life, advancing our death. But what this is teaching us, what the Father is teaching the Son, he's saying, Son, God's designed the world a certain way. God's designed us a certain way. And if you obey his teachings, his design for our life, you'll add your years to your life. You will not prematurely shorten it. All things being equal, if we live as God designed, we can expect a longer life. Now, I do say all things being equal because we have to remember we don't live in a perfect world. We've ruined the world through our sin. God did not make the world perfect. He made the world just wonderful without any flaw or mistake. It's we who've messed it up. So we will find exceptions. We will find situations where those who are fearing God and following Him and seeking to do what God wants, living according to His design, and they die early. And we will find those who are rebelling against God, doing whatever they please, living their whole life, snubbing God, ignoring Him, and they live long lives. So there are those exceptions. But what the Father is telling the Son, He says, Son, if you yourself don't want to contribute to an early death, then embrace these teachings and obey them with your heart, and they will add years. This will be the benefit to you. The second benefit that the Father teaches His Son that wisdom teaching will bring is favor and good reputation before God and men. Verse 4. Now the English Standard Version reads good success. You'll find favor and good success. The Hebrew probably is better. It's better translated more good repute or esteem or reputation as opposed to success. The condition of gaining good reputation before men or a good repute before them and the favor of God is stated there that you need to bind steadfast love and faithfulness around our neck and write them on the tablet of our heart. When you notice a parallel between verse 1 and verse 3, you see that both second halves of the verse are speaking about the heart and having the commandments or these qualities of love and faithfulness in the heart. This parallel shows us that the commandments of verse 1 and the moral character traits of love and faithfulness are the same. They are related. They go together. As one obeys the commands of God, you will have a certain type of moral character. A character that is loving, a character that is faithful. So the Father is summarizing the commands up in these two character traits. And as the person obeys these teachings, it will produce godly moral character that people will see in their lives, and they will see that in the person, and they will say, ah, I respect that person. That person is honest. They can be trusted. That person is kind. They will help, and they will gain a good godly reputation. That will be the benefit of them not forgetting the teaching, letting their heart keep those commandments. It will produce this kind of lifestyle, these kinds of moral and ethical character traits in them that people will say, yes, there's an honorable person, and they will gain the favor of God. In the Bible, a stiff neck is a symbol of rebellion. To bow the neck is a sign of submission. To have a stiff neck and to refuse to bow is a sign of insurrection or rebellion. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 1 says, "He who is often reproved, yet stiffens his neck, will suddenly be broken beyond healing." So the picture here is of a person who's repeatedly corrected, repeatedly warned, but they will not submit to the teaching. They will not submit to the correct way. And what is their end? They will be suddenly destroyed, suddenly ruined. In contrast, the wise person who is willing to learn, willing to submit to the ways of wisdom, and they, according to chapter 1, verse 9, and chapter 3, verse 3, they bind and they wear the teachings, the commands around their neck. They, in receptive submission, wearing these commands, will be honored. They will find respect from others, and they will find the favor of God. Now, what kind of obedience? What obedience? What does it look like that brings this kind of respect from others and the favor of God? Again, this is simple. If you were to look at Proverbs chapter 11, verse 26, it says, "The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it." So you have a seller of grain in those days. The grain, the wheat, the barley, it's their major staple to make their bread. And a seller or marketer of the grain can manipulate the prices. They can manipulate the prices by withholding and not be willing to sell their grain. And therefore, if they did that collectively as a grain guild or a market guild, or they could cause the prices to go up because they cause a shortage. Or perhaps maybe in a time of famine or in a time where the grain is short, they just jack the prices up and they hold their grain back until such an event occurs so that they can make more money. And when the marketer or the seller does that, they're cursed, because when people really need the help and they need the grain, they have to pay an exorbitant price for it. But when the seller sells the grain as they have it and at fair prices, they're blessed. The people say, "Bless you," and "May God bless you." You want a more modern day example that might identify better with? Think about OPEC, the oil producing nations, the oil cartel. They simply, you hear about it on the news if you pay attention to the business news. Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Venezuela, and the other key oil-producing nations, they want to raise the price. They just simply stop pumping out X number of barrels a day. They want to lower the price. They want to try to counteract the increase of oil from the U.S. using fracking. They pump up the production and drive the price down so they can try to drive other people out of business. That's all what's going on with all the oil industry and in OPEC. It's this kind of stuff, manipulating the markets so that they can make more money or gain a monopoly. So the father is telling the son, he says, "Look, son, if you take these commands, you take these wisdom teachings, and you take them to heart into your whole being, into the real self, and you live them out, they'll bring respect. People will respect you for that. People will honor you. God also will give you favor." And then we come to a third benefit of living out wisdom. Verse 6, "God will make your paths straight." This past Thanksgiving, most of you know my family and I were hiking on the Bruce Trail, and we had been hiking for about an hour, and unfortunately my wife stepped in a hole and sprained her ankle. So we needed to find the nearest route to the road, because we already had walked an hour on the trail from where we had parked the car. Now, with a badly sprained ankle, it would take far, far longer than an hour for my wife to get up that trail, and I definitely couldn't carry her all the way. So where's the nearest shortcut? How could we get through some bush and some fields? Where's the nearest road? We got to the road, and from the time I got on the road and walked up the road and down another road to where the car was parked, all the time I spent on the road, 20 minutes walk versus over an hour back on the path. Why the difference? Why the difference between 20 minutes on the road and over an hour on the trail? It's very simple. The difference is because the road is level. The road is straight, whereas the path, the trail, goes up and down and curves around and is very rough and very rugged. And that's the picture in these verses when it says about God making your paths straight. Remember in Israel, ancient Israel, and even Israel today, if you were to take a topographical slice of the whole geography in the land, there's lots of mountains, there's desert areas, there's deep valleys, there's wilderness areas, there was back then, forested areas. Travel and trails were difficult. And the picture here is that as God makes the paths straight, He is making things level. He's making it easier and safe to travel. This is the picture that is being portrayed here. Now, the word way, when it says, in all your ways acknowledge Him, and then the word that word way literally refers to a road, and you're moving on that road to a destination. But the word way here in Proverbs, along with its related words, the word path, is not so much speaking literally about a road or a pathway. It's speaking about our course of our life, the way that we're living, our chosen lifestyle. And that includes the conduct and the behavior of that lifestyle and the end destination of where that lifestyle and that chosen type of life and style of living ends up, or what it brings to us. So in other words, the word path and the word way is a metaphor for our chosen lifestyle and the destiny of the lifestyle. And such usage of this occurred first in verse 15 of chapter 1. Where we saw in chapter 1, verse 15, the father told the son, he said, "Do not walk in the way and keep your foot from the path of the gang." Translation, keep yourself from choosing and embracing the lifestyle and the style of living of a gang member. That's what he's saying when he says, don't let your foot walk on their path. Son, don't take up the behavior. Don't take up the lifestyle of a gang member. Proverbs reveals, when you go through the book of Proverbs and pull out and pay attention to where the way or the path or the trail is mentioned, you'll see that the way or the path, the lifestyle of the wicked, the chosen course of life for the wicked are crooked, they're dark, they causes them to stumble, and ultimately it leads them to death. Where contrastingly, the lifestyle of the righteous, the one who fears God, they find themselves on something very opposite. They find themselves on something that is straight, a course of life that is straight, that is level, that is bright, that ends in life. So when the commands of the wise and God are obeyed, what this is telling us here is the benefit to one's lifestyle and one's course of life will be brightened, be straightened, be leveled, be eased by God as He protects, as He guides, as He instructs the God-fearer to the destiny of life. This is what is being referred to in this passage of the path and the way. Now, there are conditions. Again, two conditions in verses 5 and 6. If God is going to make the path level or straighten the way for you, you need to fulfill two conditions. And the first condition is you must exclusively and personally trust in the Lord with all our or your heart, while not trusting our or your own ability to figure out life and decide things on your own. This is another way, really. It's just another way to state what we learned earlier back in chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We need to surrender, to submit, to bow our necks personally to God and say, "You alone know the chosen lifestyle and design for my life that is best, that will lead to to life. And I'm going to trust you with all that I am and walk that path. And I'm not going to trust myself or my own ability to figure it out or make all the decisions on my own. Now, this raises a very important implication and application of spiritual decision and growth for the youth. So remember here, the context is the father speaking to his son. The young person cannot rely on the faith and the authority of their parents. The young person, as they are growing up and as they are getting ready to go out and choose their own lifestyle and leave the parental nest, if they want to have a path that is level and smooth, they need to exclusively and personally trust in the Lord with all their heart and not lean on their own understanding. They cannot rely on their parents' faith. They have to have their own faith. They cannot rely on the authority of their parents. They must rely on the authority of God and His sovereignty. Bruce Waltke notes, the chapter began with the father telling the son to commit to keep the father's teaching. But as the child grows up, the child must transfer their trust from the parent to God Himself. The child cannot live their life and go through life trusting and relying on the parent's faith. They must have their own faith. They must transfer their trust and confidence in their parents from that they had when they were young to the God who has given the wisdom teaching to their parents that their parents are passing on. They must transfer their trust from their parents to the God who designed them and the world. They must transfer their trust from their parents to the God who upholds His moral order and promises so that they accept the way of wisdom as true and worth living. Because you see, behind the way of wisdom is not just an impersonal law code. The father is not just passing on a bunch of traditions and customs and laws that have been passed down who knows how many generations. He's not just passing on laws and traditions. He's passing on the words and the speech of the covenant-making God of Israel. And so the child must not just see this teaching of wisdom as tradition, but as something that comes from the very God of Israel. And he must put his trust not in the laws, but in the God of the laws. Not just keep his trust and say, yeah, this is what my parents have taught me. I've trusted them since I'm young. I'll keep trusting them. No, he has to trust in the God of Israel. The God who designed him. The God who has designed life. While a child grows up in a family, what the parents teach the child just largely accepts. The child just largely obeys. Because the child naturally, generally trusts the parent and accepts what the parent says as true. But there comes a point where every youth must make their own choice. Sometimes during their teens or their very early adult years, consciously or unconsciously, the child is making a choice. Shall I accept what my parents told me as true, or shall I reject it? Shall I accept that there is a God who designed me and created me and has a particular path that is level and smooth for me to walk, or not? Or shall I rebel? So every youth must ask, will I personally trust the God of my parents, making their God my God? Will I choose to believe, not because my parents tell me, but because I know I can't figure out life, but God has the instructions, and I need to ask and know Him, because He's my Creator, and He has the way of my life figured out, the best way. So that's the first condition If we want God to make our paths straight and our paths level, we need to have that personal trust in Him. Secondly, the condition is we have to exhaustively acknowledge God in all, not just some, of our ways. The second condition is to exhaustively. The first condition was exclusively trust God. The second one is now trust God in everything, not just some of our ways. Now, if you're like me, you've probably quoted Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, and you've probably heard other people quote Proverbs 3 and 5 and 6 as it relates to some major decision that you're facing, or some major problem, a wall that you've run into that you can't figure out how to solve or get through or get over. You've got a decision, you've got a problem that stumps you. And that's when we, including myself, have trotted out Proverbs 3, 4, and 5. Trust in the Lord in all your ways and lean not on your own understanding, and He'll make straight the path. Situations like you've completed your schooling and you've sent out all your resumes and you haven't got one bite, not one interview. Situations of all of a sudden of a serious illness that has been diagnosed or a sudden handicap because of an accident. And it requires major adjustment in your life. Loss of freedom, financial problems, loss of mobility. You've run into a wall. And at these times, we trot out these verses. Trust in the Lord. Don't lean on my understanding. I don't know how to fix it. I can't get through it. But God will fix it. And what do we mean when we trot these verses out? This is usually what we mean. Okay, I don't know what option to choose. I don't know how to figure out a solution. It's beyond my ability to fix this. So since I've tried everything and I can't figure it out, well, God, I'm going to now trust you. You tell me what choice to make. You get me through or over this wall. You solve this problem I can't. But this is not a proper understanding of Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, nor it is a proper application. It is a misapplication. It's a wrenching of these verses out of its context. You see, it is true we need to trust God as we make a choice amongst multiple options. We need to trust God when we hit the wall and we encounter insurmountable problems we can't fix. That's true. But these verses are not meant to be applied as promises when we come to our wits' end and can't figure it out, and then we think, okay, we turn it over to God and He'll fix it. That's not at all what these verses mean or how they're to be applied. Rather, trusting God with all our heart and acknowledging Him in all our ways is referring to a trust and submission to let God direct, guide, and control our whole life, our entire direction. It's to let Him make the path of our life. Not where we walk along the path merrily and then when we run into a roadblock, hey, come down here. I can't get rid of the block. It's no. This trusting and acknowledging Him in all our ways is for the entirety of our life. We choose our lifestyle and we walk the way He wants for the whole of our life. This is what it's really speaking about. This is what it means to acknowledge Him in all our ways and do not lean on our own understanding. So it starts at the very beginning where we say, God, I cannot find my way through life. So you show me the entire path. And I'll trust you in all my ways. Acknowledge you in all my ways. With all my heart. Show me the path. The questions remain for each of us. And the first question is, are we simply trusting or looking to God only after we run into trouble and can't figure something out? You see, if we're doing that, then we're like the driver who's lost and refuses to stop for directions. The driver is not sure which is the right way. How do I get to my destination? But you know how many of us refuse to stop for directions and ask? And to the chagrin and the great exasperation of our spouses in the driver's seat, in the passenger seat, they endure the getting lost, they endure the wasted time. That's question number one. Are you just looking to God only when you run into trouble? That's to be like this kind of driver. Not at all. You're just driving as you want, however you please, until you actually come to a dead end. Or are we trusting God in the manner of a constant orientation upon which all our life is lived? That's what Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 is really speaking about. This is what the wise do. Those who fear the Lord, trust in Him with all their heart, acknowledge Him in all their ways. Those He leads home on straight paths, along with various tangible blessings that will result. Verse 7 really just simply backs up this understanding of this passage. It says, be not wise in your own eyes, fear the Lord, and turn away from evil. It's just another way to restate that the whole of your life, you need to trust God with all of your heart, and in all your ways acknowledge Him. And then that brings healing to your flesh, refreshments to your bones. In other words, it's going to bring life to us. Those who refuse to have this constant orientation towards God on which all our life is lived, those who refuse, who think that they can find life and figure it out on their own and can make their own way, they're going to travel crooked paths, dark paths. They're going to fall and stumble, and eventually they shall die. That's their destiny. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12 says, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. That's the opposite of not leaning on your own understanding. If we want to lean on our own understanding, we will find a way we think is right, that seems right, but it is an illusion. It is an illusion. It brings death. So I end with Proverbs chapter 2, verses 6 to 15. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the ways of His saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity in every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech, who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and whose ways are, and who are devious in their ways. Two different paths, two different destinies. But if we would accept these teachings of the wise, these godly teachings, the Father is telling the Son, you will receive the benefit where God will make your path straight, make your path bright, make your path level. Choice is ours.